Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Mormon Matters Podcasts 2.0, our relaunch here. We're early in our series since we've picked up again after a couple of years off the air. My name is Dan Weatherspoon. I'm the new host of these discussions, which are panel discussions about once a week. We'll be releasing these, and it's on news within the Mormon world, trending topics within the world that we think Mormonism might have an interesting take on, and just generally fun and interesting people that we hope you guys will enjoy tuning into and listening to discuss, and probably not solve problems, but at least help frame them as for your own thinking. And of course, we absolutely welcome you to go to mormonmatters.org at the end of every one of these podcasts that you listen to, or just tune in anyway and join the discussion there. We hope to, you know, by raising the different issues and looking at all the different angles on the show, that that will set up a good framework for a great discussion where maybe those problems truly will be solved. You never know. So I'm grateful to have three great guests to talk about our topic today. And this is, again, we want to be a reflective forum in the sense that we want to quickly get on stories that are raised within Mormonism. So we've kind of put together this one quite quickly on the Brandon Davies BYU basketball situation. And I've got, as I mentioned, three great guests. One of them is a regular. She appeared on our first episode of the relaunch, and that was that is Joanna Brooks. For those of you who need a quick reintroduction, Joanna's a literature professor at San Diego State University who happens to be BYU's big rival this year. How about that, Joanna?
Boy, do I have stories.
Okay, we want to hear about it. I heard there were some fun costumes that people dressed up with at the home game recently and things like that to kind of tease tease Mormons. So we'll get on back, but she's a professor there. Joanna, for those of you know, is often sought out by news media. She's been published everywhere. She's been quoted everywhere. It's really one of Mormonism's good, keen observers. She's had her own blog called Ask Mormon Girl for quite a while, but my understanding is it's now hosted over at Feminist Mormon Housewives. Is that right?
Yep. And I write every week about Mormonism for Religion Dispatches.
Religion Dispatches, right.
Too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. So that's great to have you. And
thanks, Dan.
Our listeners love having you when you're on. Our second guest is a friend who I've just reconnected with, but I thought of him immediately on this. His name is Tom Grover. He is a Utah State Aggie. And what's so fun about Tom is he wears his Aggie-ness on his sleeve, but he's a well-known, very thoughtful person who actually hosted for 3 years in Logan a radio show on KVNU, and it was called For the People, and it was a few hours every afternoon and drive time on politics and Utah events, and he's really well... you know, he has a really good feel for Mormon culture and its intersection with larger issues. Tom did decide that he wanted to go on to law school, so he has now found himself in Cornhusker land in Lincoln, Nebraska, and he's in his third year of law school. He'll graduate in May from there. So, and like I say, I thought of Tom immediately because I'm a Facebook friend, and with Tom, you always get good comments on any sports story that's out there, as well as kind of hints about who he's rooting for, and he has a very strong opinion. So, Tom, welcome.
Dan, it's a pleasure to be with you and Ashley and Joanna.
Good. Well, you've now told us who our third guest is, and it's Ashley Sanders, everyone. We're grateful to have her. Ashley is probably fairly well known to many of you. She, Ash, were you ever on the earlier instance of Mormon Matters?
I never was.
Yeah, you did produce... You've done a lot of things with John DeLynn, sort of in conjunction with him. I know we certainly got acquainted when I was at Sunstone, and you were one of our stalwart Energizer Bunny type people organizing panels for us and just always bringing fresh perspectives. I know I published you at least a couple of times in Sunstone. I know once we did one on a larger framing of Mormonism and politics, and I know we did something in the Mormon Women's Voices issue back in 2007, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought of Ashley to bring on for this podcast because of her background as an activist at BYU. I'll let her unfold any particular stories. I will mention that Ashley was... She managed to make it through BYU while being an activist, but one of her things that actually got her quite a bit of attention, not that she was trying for attention so much as just really do something that she felt strongly about, and that was she organized the alternate commencement at BYU the year that BYU had invited Dick Cheney to speak. And didn't seem to hear objections very well and stuff. So she was the driving force behind that. And she's continued a sort of an activist lifestyle and livelihood after there. She's a community organizer. She teaches at the Salt Lake Free School. She teaches feminism and things like that. And we're grateful to have Ashley. And oh, also, Ashley did a great session once at Sunstone on BYU's Honor Code. And so that was another reason I thought of her. So welcome, Ash.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. All right, guys. Let me quickly frame the issue for those listeners who, you know, I can't imagine anyone doesn't know what happened. But I'll do a quick job because I don't want to say too much that's obvious. But a week ago today, we're actually recording this on Monday the 7th. So I think Tuesday, a week ago tomorrow, is the day that it was announced. But apparently about a week ago today, Brandon Davies, who's one of the stars of BYU's basketball team, it was ranked number 3 at the
time.
And now it's number 8. So the new rankings that came out today, and it's fallen to 8. But Brandon came to the coaches and shared with the fact that he had violated the honor code. We know that it was some sort of sexual thing in nature. There's rumors that his girlfriend is pregnant, but I don't think any of those have been confirmed in any kind of way. But somehow or other, he went to the coaches, said, "Here's what's going on." They got the honors code office involved, and he was suspended from the team for the rest of the year. And, you know, the big news in the Nationals with Jimmer Fredette as a Player of the Year candidate, and BYU was already on the map and stuff, was that here BYU, which was poised to probably get a number one ranking in one of the regionals for the NCAA tournament, is now, without one of their stars. They went on and lost their next game last Wednesday, so, the day after this announcement happened. They did recover and beat Wyoming this weekend, but it was a blow to the program. But there's been some interesting developments, and we'll talk about that afterwards. So really, this is a discussion today of BYU's actions, the fact about how big a story this went, the sort of commentaries that are out there, how it's played in various opinion things, and just the larger issues we'll try to move into about BYU and its honors code. So does that sound like an okay framing to you guys?
Sounds yep. Great.
Was there any details I left out?
Well, you know, here's the thing, and I don't want to make this about trafficking in the details of young people's lives, but the Bloggernacle is reporting in some regions that there is a pregnancy. It's not his girlfriend. It was someone on the side. She's young. She's from California. She's a UVU student. She was sent there by her folks to get straightened out in Provo, and that it was actually her roommates who turned him in. So there's some conflicting data still out there about how this all came to light. And, there are names being circulated on the internet, none of which we're going to say here. But it does, I bring it up only because it adds a wrinkle to the whole honor code question about how does this stuff get found out, you know, so. I add that for what it's worth.
No, that's good. And I actually had seen those rumors. I hadn't seen a reliable source yet on any of them. So I caught that a couple of hours ago too, Joanna. And I'm sure by the time we edit this podcast and release it probably, you know, in 36 hours or something by now, we may know a lot more. So please forgive us, folks, if we, you know, are talking a little bit behind the actual things. This isn't quite live, and but we're going to try to turn it around really quite quickly. So thank you for adding that. Anybody else with an additional framing before we kind of get in and start discussing?
Can I just jump in on that, Dan? Because I think that's probably one of the most interesting things about these athletes at BYU that get in trouble is it puts BYU in such a difficult position about how they handle it. Because on the one hand, it would be arguably inappropriate for them to share details about what the violation was. But when they don't share the details, it fuels this speculation that is probably half-truths at best. And, you know, Mormonism is a small community, even nationwide. And when you get the internet involved, you know, all kinds of crazy things can be spread, and they can't be confirmed or denied. And so I think that's kind of a difficult position that BYU gets put in when these things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Do we want to dive right in on the tale of Tom's point, or did somebody else want to add an additional framing? Because I think Tom maybe gave us a good place to start.
Well, I mean, Tom's point brings up for me, you know, the whole question of disclosure, because that was my first reaction when the news broke was, aw shucks, because I had just been to the SDSU versus BYU game and thoroughly enjoyed myself. But, you know, I wrote to my friends, I said, well, you know, when we were at BYU and I was at BYU in the late 80s, early 90s, it was assumed, you know, we all knew the athletes were allegedly having wild parties. Is someone trying to make an example of this kid? How did it come to light? How is it disclosed? And that seems to be a really pertinent thread coming out of, Tom, what you said about the pressure that it puts BYU on and the whole context, the honor code and national visibility creates for these young people.
And that's a lot to bear for a 19-year-old. Oh. My judgment as a 19-year-old was horrific, and I can't imagine being asked to bear the burden of national exposure if I make certain kinds of mistakes. That's just a lot to ask of a kid, really.
Yep.
Ash, you want to jump in?
Well, I think that you set up the frame well. I just think that this whole discussion feels very surreal to me because in what other context, in what other college context or situation in this nation would a group of us be sitting together discussing the sexual, you know, private life of a 19-year-old guy
seriously
on the basketball team and the consequences for him when he revealed that? And it's just so, for me, it brings up this bizarre element of the honor code that begins with, we believe in being chaste, benevolent, virtuous, and in doing good to all men. But really, it creates this kind of crazy gossip mill where we talk about people's actions as if they're our public property and where those actions can devastate a person's life or reputation or career in ways that are seriously unfair, in my opinion. So.
Well, and in general, it's just a tough week to be a 19, you know, it's been a tough few weeks to be a 19, 20, 21-year-old BYU basketball player. I mean, Jimmer Fredette, one of the big pranks that SDSU fans played on Jimmer Fredette was a joke on the fact that he was chaste or, you know, reputedly chaste. There was a whole, SDSU fans did this whole campaign to Facebook poke his girlfriend, and they printed t-shirts that said, I poked Jimmer's girlfriend because
oh,
he couldn't
do man.
A week before the game at State, I saw kids walking around with the I Poke Jimmer's Girlfriend shirt. It was on the front page of the student newspaper, a campus of 35,000 kids. So, I mean, when they're chased, they become reputedly chased, right? We become the object of scrutiny. And when they're not, these guys are the object of scrutiny. It's just not an easy week for them or an easy season.
And
wow.
What's amazing about the media coverage, kind of building off of that, is this story took on national proportions in the shadow of Charlie Sheen. That's how big this was. Charlie Sheen couldn't even overcome this. And I thought that's kind of funny, but it's actually really true. We, you know, just 20 minutes ago, I was in the living room with Karen and Chelsea Lately's cracking jokes about this, kind of in the same vein. You know, it's been on ESPN and CNN, and Amari Stoudemire of the New York Knicks weighed in on Twitter, and that caused quite a buzz, and he backed off of that. Just huge, the proportion. Because, you know, an athlete being kicked out of BYU for violating the honor code, this isn't the first time it's happened. It happens regularly. But to have it on this scale and this stage is just unprecedented. It's huge.
Can we talk about the Stoudemire tweet for a minute? Because I think, you know, one of the contexts it sets up is that, you know, Brandon Davies is African-American and, you know, our team is, you know, has historically been mostly white. And, you know, that's one of the signs SDSU fans were taunting the BYU team with was you need more white guys. And, you know, immediately but for better or worse, because of our church's historical issues with race become a factor. Amari Stoudemire knows nothing about Mormons, I'll bet you, except for what any African-American knows, which is there's generally something off about Mormons and black people. And, you know, and so when he weighed in, his tweet was BYU won't let a young educated brother, you know, finish his education. And there was a racial critique in the tweet. And that was a context. That was a context for this discussion. Not verifiable. I don't think race was really a factor for BYU, but it was for everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and Joanna, you mentioned the Amari Stoudemire tweet, and he actually backed off of that, which I think is interesting. And he put up a second tweet today, and it said, "I totally understand the actions of BYU. I totally respect the school and the conduct rules. BYU has a great athletic program." And to me, I don't want to you know, disrespect Amari, but that's, you know, smells like somebody went to him and said, you probably ought to back off of that and not wade into the middle of this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that probably happened too. And he actually played really well and kicked the Jazz's rear end tonight. So, anyway, darn it. I was hoping he would be distracted by all this.
I mean, for the issue of general coverage, though, I mean, Tom, Ashley, I'd be interested in hearing you, you know, assess how do you think BYU has come off on the whole in the national coverage? Because I think everybody who knows one Mormon has tried to, or even not even one Mormon has tried to weigh on this.
Yeah. I think it's been overwhelmingly positive. There have been I've read a few blog posts here and there by people who claim that sex is rampant at BYU, and I didn't attend BYU, so I don't know whether that's true or not. I don't think that it's likely. But you know, the commentary on ESPN, there was an article in Time Magazine this last week. It's been consistently positive for BYU and the church. And I think a lot of that comes in the face of a lot of other sports scandals like Cam Newton. People were pretty upset about that this last football season. And I think they just like the contrast. So I think it's been overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, I think BYU has come off as being a school that will, you know, kick off one of its star players from its basketball team in, you know, a winning or potentially victorious NCAA season. And that kind of action in the sports world, or really in any world that a lot of people are familiar with, is very rare. So they're getting a lot of props for, well, at least they have integrity and they're holding their sports stars accountable just like their other students. But I think that is easy to say if you're not very familiar with BYU culture and you don't understand how insidious these practices are and how bizarre it is that, you know, a person who's worked his whole life to be that kind of basketball player and who made a decision that was his own decision has to basically see that dream unravel because whether he was told on or he turned himself in because of an honor code that really isn't about honor, and it is really a code, and it's a very guilt-inducing and guilt-inspired document that has very little to do with actual honor. So I think that the props BYU is getting for this are a little unfounded. Well, I think they're unfounded because I disagree with the honor code. And I think that it's really quite tragic that he has to suffer these kinds of consequences for something that he chose to do that I don't think has anything to do with his basketball career. So,
okay, I mean, go ahead. I want to get into the honor code in general later, Ash. So let's keep a little bit more on Brandon right now. Go ahead, Joanna, if you had something. Are you wanting to talk more about the particular case or the more general things that Ashley was sending us to?
I was about to go down the honor code rabbit hole, but I will hold off at your direction.
Okay.
I think there's been a strong law and order kind of theme in the commentary. You know, he knew what he was signing up for and he didn't follow through, and good for BYU for sticking to it. He knew what he was getting into when he went to BYU. But, you know, the whole mercy, whenever there's a conversation about justice, there needs to be a conversation about mercy. And I think that's the whole side of the story that Ashley's going to help us explore later.
Good. Yeah. And there are about three pieces that I think we need to at least bring up. Go ahead. And Tom, you have something Brandon case.
Yeah, I do actually. If we can talk about the honor court specifically, and I, like I said, I didn't go to BYU, so I'm not familiar with that culture like you guys are, but you know, let's say BYU had shown some leniency here, at least from a public relations perspective. You know, and there's obviously a real person involved here, but from a public relations perspective, that's probably one of the worst things they could have done. You know, if it had come to light during or after the NCAA tournament that his girlfriend was in fact pregnant and that BYU allowed him to play, then it makes BYU look like they're applying standards of convenience. I think no matter what BYU chose to do in this situation, they were going to receive criticism, but the path that they took just from a PR perspective was probably the best one they could have taken, which was immediate dismissal.
Yeah. I agree with that. And we got to remember that one of the things I wanted to bring up, Harvey Unga was the BYU's leading rusher, you know, all through his freshman, sophomore and junior year. And he and his girlfriend got pregnant and he was not allowed to even come back to school for his senior year. So he declared for the draft and all that stuff. So they, what you just said, Tom, is right. If it had come out later, it would have been so inconsistent with what they've done with Harvey Unga. Now, whether or not it's right to do any of these, you know, public things or not is the separate question.
Yeah. Can we talk about Harvey Unga? Sorry, Joanna, go ahead.
Let's talk about Harvey. Go ahead.
Oh. Yeah, I think, you know, we talked a little bit ago about the dilemma of how much information BYU gives out and how that fuels speculation. I really feel like BYU treated Harvey Unga unfairly. And his girlfriend, who was also kicked out at the same time, was an athlete. And when BYU announced that they were kicking them out, they did the announcement for both Harvey Unga and his girlfriend at the same time.
Refused
to say anything. Which, I mean, obviously they couldn't have made it worse for those two individuals in terms of fueling speculation about what had happened. And I felt that was really unfair and that maybe they could have done that a little bit more carefully.
Can we just say our culture really, really has a ways to go when it comes to dealing with unplanned pregnancies? I mean, it really does.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, when I was growing up, you know, girls straight up disappeared for 6 to 9 months and came back with their bodies evidently. I mean, they're 14, you know, where'd they go? Oh, to Arizona. I mean, girls are sent away when they got pregnant. We have a long way to go. And in the way we deal with unplanned pregnancies, you know, and the thought that, you know, youth don't have access or don't, I'm so mixed about it. I mean, it's just, well, I'm not mixed about it actually, but I mean, give me a break. Oh, it's so frustrating. I'm at a loss. Continue.
Okay. So any more on Unga and stuff? But I do think, you know, they had the consistency problem, and whether they botched that one, you know, the same thing's going on here. Absolutely. Two other things, though, I think we ought to at least bring up. In the initial press conference, it was asked about, here is a private act. This is a young man, and this should be something between him and his ecclesiastical leader or something with the school if it's the honor code, and yet he is having this public thing. And I think it was the athletic director, Tom Holmo, who said something like, these athletes here are high-profile people, and it's impossible to, you know, do, you know, to keep it out of it. So in other words, when you come to BYU and you're an athlete, you accept the scholarship, you accept the possibility that this would be the case. Does that mitigate anything to you? Is that a persuasive argument to anyone here?
I can't believe I'm finding myself as an Aggie defending BYU. This is causing me all kinds of inner turmoil. But
well, it's because as a lawyer, you're gonna go to discovery, and you would find this out anyway, right?
Right. I do find some credibility. I know that Joanna and Ashley mentioned earlier that we tend to be a little bit heavy-handed in our culture on the justice side of the justice mercy scale, but I think there is something to that. There are a lot of different college experiences available to people, and when you sign up for BYU, that's a really unique experience with some unique responsibilities. Brandon Davies could have decided to go play for the Utes or, you know, gosh darn it, the Aggies, and it would have been a completely different set of expectations. That doesn't mean that, you know, he deserves to be ridiculed on a national scale or the subject of speculation, but I think that that's got to be factored into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it ridicule, though? I mean, is he ridiculed?
He was ridiculed on Cincy lately tonight. It was pretty brutal.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen pretty much everything from, you know, people posting the Saturday Night Live digital short where they did the song, "I just had sex," and, you know, he's too busy getting high fives for his activity, and so he doesn't seem ridiculed from that end. And actually, one of the other things that I said, you know, I think there's a piece of this story that before we get on to the more general questions that we ought to do is how, at least publicly so far since it's happened, how he's been received, the rhetoric there, you know, for instance, in that press conference, Holmo and Coach Rose said, you know, the very first thing that we did is we went and put our arms around him. We told him we loved him. You know, certainly the team, as they interviewed them, Brandon's our buddy. We love him. He's a great kid. Everybody makes a mistake. We still want him with us. He's appeared on the bench, you know, at their Saturday game when they clinched the Mountain West division. He was invited, you know, for all the photos. He stood up on the ladder and, you know, cut down the net with everybody else and took his piece of the net. So, and of course the crowd has just gone wild and supporting him. And it's, you know, maybe it's, you could say sarcastically, they just want him to make sure that he'll come back next year and, you know, lead him on to some good things. But I do think in some ways we are seeing the heart of Mormons here, at least peeking through this stuff that we're looking at, you know, in a, it's a tough story, but I'm seeing some positive things. Anyone else reading it the same way?
Yeah, they had him cut down the last piece of the net after
good.
The Wyoming game, and that's, you know, that's a big honor to be the person that does that, and that's usually something that's very carefully thought out at the end of a championship run. So it you know, Joanna mentioned earlier the girls that got sent off and the shame involved there, and maybe we're not seeing so much of that shame in this instance where we're hiding someone because we're embarrassed about what they did.
That would be terrific. I just hope it extends to, you know, the mother of the child as well, you know. Tom, I just, before we head towards honor code, I just want, you know, from a sports perspective, you know, is there any word on how Jimmer's doing with all of this and, you know, what he thinks going to happen in the tournament? It's been quite a thrill ride for BYU.
Yeah, you know, and my, you know, as an Aggie, one of the things we look forward to every year in basketball is just heckling the snot out of BYU.
Well,
you,
we should add Aggies are ranked, right?
Right. Yeah, we're headed to the tournament too. But I mentioned that because I read a lot of Utah State blogs and message boards, and BYU is so likable and so good this year that even Aggie fans are excited for them. And I just checked the bracketology, and prior to the dismissal, BYU was pretty much projected to be a number one seed, as Dan said earlier, and they've only fallen to a four seed. So they're still in a position to make a pretty nice run in the tournament. And the season certainly isn't over by any means. I think that they can still have a pretty magical March and April.
Yeah, sweet 16, I think, would be pretty – it would be a disappointment not to go at least to that.
Right.
Yeah, even without Brandon, especially with some of the other guys playing the way they are. But I'm just trying to think – the one other thing I want to bring up, and maybe any of you maybe it only happened here in Utah. I went to a baby blessing, so I was down in Orem yesterday, and the very first testimony in testimony meeting was a guy, I mean, the bishop's counselor who was bearing his testimony, as you do when you're the conducting guy, was like basically still closing, and this guy is walking up the aisle, so he was ready. And out of his mouth was, "I am so grateful, you know, that this church is led by prophets and that we have these standards." And he, and, you know, seriously, it was 5 to 7 minutes on this Brandon Davies thing and how it strengthened his testimony. But he also did, you know, he added in that compassion that, you know, this, we should all pray for this kid, that we love him. You know, this is, you know, this shouldn't, you know, ruin his life and, you know, help him heal and all those different things. So it was a mixed bag that, you know, here, you know, he's using this as a strengthening thing, and yet it's a tragedy, but at the same time, he was revealing compassion.
Mm. So, I like that. That's good.
Yeah, with that compassion, you know, Joanna mentioned earlier the mother and the daughter specifically here, but more broadly, is that compassion, is that something that would be elicited by the community if it was just an average person who wasn't in a high-profile position like that?
You know, I don't know.
I'm very unconvinced. I went to BYU for too many years, but I think the attitude of the person who bore that testimony is exactly the consequence of the honor code that I fear the most, which is what I think is a very condescending attitude about hoping that the person heals or that they find the light and the right path again, instead of questioning the whole premise of, you know, of why we are doing this to this person and if it's actually loving to enforce standards in these ways, or if enforcing standards in these ways actually is helpful or reflective of being a Christian at all. I think that the question, and once again, I'm going down the bigger picture rabbit hole, which I can't keep myself from doing, I guess, but I think that it brings up a lot of false piety and a lot of very narrow discussion of standards, and kind of what I feel is a very condescending compassion for other people that doesn't actually question, you know, like, oh, we wish his life wouldn't be ruined, but it is being ruined, and we don't question the reason that it is. We just say we're grateful for it, and we wish him the best in his pathway through that. Like, well, I just don't buy it.
And none of this would be a matter of discussion if there wasn't a pregnancy.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I really just
something
don't...
was going to break, and so he went to the coaches.
I mean, yeah, you know, it just wouldn't be an issue if there weren't a real reason for it to have come out. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
Which brings up the whole, like, so we're doing this community scenario where we're like, we're so glad he confessed, he was forthright, we love him, we're taking him in, but would he have confessed if there weren't a pregnancy?
Right, and that's my issue, is it makes us turn a blind eye to the coercive factors that are involved in these supposedly contrite acts of confession, and I think the coercion involved behind it is so wrong. And if you, whether it's a person who doesn't have any basketball skills and they're just at BYU and they're a student who's given 4 years of their life to getting a degree, and because they did something that they may or may not think is wrong, but that the school thinks it is wrong and has connected with their, like, academic, you know, destiny, they have to sacrifice 4 years of something that they worked for. I mean, when you pit people against things in that way, especially if you don't provide a context for a discussion on what they do think is right or wrong, or what would actually be a Christian thing to do, then you put them in a position where you're only going to get confessions if there's a necessity for them. It's just a very,
that's right,
unshiny,
that's
morality.
Right. I mean, the honor code, as I experienced it and as I wrote about it when I was a BYU student, was people confess things like premarital sex when they have to, when they don't have a choice, and when they're often at their most vulnerable. And that's just quite a situation to put a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid in, is to say your whole college career rides on the fact of whether you confess this thing that you feel you must confess or that you can no longer hide. You know, people come to the honor code office at their most vulnerable. It preys on the vulnerable, the way that it's set up, unfortunately.
And what would you?
And I'm just I'm looking at this as an outsider because I never lived it. But what would the two of you propose as an alternative for a church school? Because BYU is not a public school. It is intended to be something different. If people don't like the honor code, there are a lot of great schools in Utah and the Intermountain West. So what would you propose as an alternative?
Well, I think I heard that argument when I was there so many times, and it's as if we think that because you've signed a document that you're a private school, you can then enforce any kind of system that you want to, and you're justified in it rather than, you know, being able to talk about whether that system is actually justified and doing what it claims to want to be doing. And so I think that's one issue. And the other issue is I think it's not fair to talk about choice in that constricted matter. Like I heard all the time at BYU, if you don't like the honor code, and I'm not saying this is what you're saying, but I heard all the time, if you don't like the honor code, you can go somewhere else. Well, there are reasons I wanted to be at BYU, and I didn't think that I should have to go somewhere else simply because I found that a document that governed some of the school's behavior was deeply flawed. And so I think that first people should have the choice to go there and disagree with the honor code and change it. And that also just because BYU is a private institution doesn't mean that they ought to be pushing a document or a protocol that I think actually keeps people from deeply Christian actions of, say, asking themselves what they think is right or wrong. If you know, Brandon Davies comes out and says, I feel so bad about, you know, this sexual thing or that I've done that I don't want to play basketball anymore because I don't feel right about it, that's one thing. If he comes out of coercion and was never given a chance to really ask himself what he thought was right or wrong about sexuality or what he thinks about that principle in general, then that isn't Christianity to me. It isn't Mormonism, and it isn't helping anybody. So I would get rid of the honor code completely or reduce it to what it was when it started, which was a voluntary pledge that people took to not cheat academically on things.
Tom, let me fill in some of the context, too. Sure. I mean, because I think it's a really, for people who didn't attend BYU or don't have firsthand experience with it, you know, it's the issue is one of how it's enforced and how infractions are handled. And the way that it was handled when I was there, and some of this continues, was that, you know, third party referrals, reports were accepted by the Honor Code office. So someone's roommate could tell on them, someone's, you know, grandmother could tell on them. The roommates of a jilted boyfriend or girlfriend could tell on them. There were even actually reports of, you know, spying set up where there were situations designed or, you know, liberals were profiled, gay kids were profiled and kind of set up and baited in some instances that reported. And so those are some of the less satisfying fruits of the honor code system. Was the, you know, the opportunity for abuse, and by well-meaning people and by not well-meaning people. The other main dimension is that it opens up the whole question of clergy and confidentiality, so that, you know, there when I was there, at least, and Ashley, you can fill us in on the more recent side, you know, the whole question of what it meant to confess something to your clerical leader, to your bishop, that room was not closed. That room was not a private space. The institution had a direct door, and depending on who your bishop was, at their discretion, they might feel obliged to report you directly to the honor code office. So I knew people who were trying to sort out things like date rape in the past, and they felt they needed to confess, you know, young women who had been in if not a coercive situation, then a marginally coercive sexual situation, strongly felt they needed to sort it out with the assistance of a clerical leader, and found themselves staring at being dismissed from the university and having to tell their parents over something they weren't even sure was consensual, just for discussing a sexual act with their bishop. And so, you know, I don't know that there's a black and white answer. All I know is that the way that it has been in the honor code has been enforced in the past 20 years has created opportunities for abuse and situations that really take away a person's right to grow spiritually within the confines of a trusting clerical relationship.
So do you agree with Ashley then that the best approach then would be a voluntary self-enforcing code?
I don't have a ready answer. I don't pretend to be an expert on the answer. I sure know what the problems were. But I mean, I think that's it's an important thing to consider. If an honor code is an honor code, then it's something one observes on their honor. I mean, what do you think, Tom? I mean, you know, how can you think of a humane way? I mean, literally open-ended. Can you think of a humane way to enforce honor or enforce a code of behavior?
Well, you know, I guess what Ashley's proposal, and I'm thinking this through, might look like is probably a lot like what I experienced at Utah State, really, where most of the students were LDS and nobody was really worried about what anybody else was doing. And as far as the people I was hanging around with, nobody was doing anything that would have run afoul of church standards in terms of the word of wisdom or the law of chastity, at least not seriously. I mean,
what about sideburns? Sideburns, man.
I'm talking about the real substantive things.
I'm teasing you.
Yeah, but maybe that's what it would look like. And then I guess the retort you'd get from some people is, well, if that's already available at Utah State, then why do we even need a BYU? You
know, well, I mean, that's how it is in a ward. In a ward, you know, no one, well, not no one, but there isn't an institutional mechanism for a third party reporting your sins, you know, to the bishop. I mean, gossip happens, but confession is voluntary, right? In a ward.
Well, is it? Because I think I know I've been in ward councils or PEC meetings where people have been ratted out, so to speak. It's not as permissive as maybe what you experienced at BYU. And I, like I said, I haven't been to BYU, so I don't know what it's like. But I think even in a ward community, people get ratted out, so to speak.
But they're not going to lose their livelihood over it.
No, that's an important difference.
But I think the problem is a similar problem, and it persists in any culture, any setting where people's actions aren't motivated by their own personal principles, or where the primary principle isn't personal transformation through thinking and exploring ideas and ethics. And I think that was my biggest problem at BYU. I felt like I was prevented from being a good person because of all the obsession that was placed on looking like a good person. And the things that they could relate to and connect to being a good person became so far-fetched and so irrelevant in my mind, and also antagonistic to actual true, you know, whether you want to call it true humaneness or true Christianity or whatever it was, that I thought that the damage done was far greater. It created a culture of surveillance. It stopped conversations that were productive and interesting about how to be a good person in the world before they were done maturing. It took people who were 18 to 20 something years old, who were trying to figure out in one of the most exciting times of their life what they thought about how they should act in the world. And it basically gave them the answers. And I think it gave them a lot of wrong answers. And it was very elastic, so it could be stretched to include all these instances that had nothing to do with what I consider to be virtue, and that I felt were very, very coercive. So looking at the history of the honor code, and knowing that at first it was a voluntary code that people signed that had to do with academic honesty, and that it was then taken by Ernest Wilkinson for very politically motivated reasons to rout out leftists, essentially, and made into a document that that basically perpetrated a very like middle class suburban aesthetic, and then equated that with what Mormonism was. Like, the damage done by that is real and I think huge. And then, you know, all the things that came with that, they're just so disingenuous to me. They have nothing to do with like an actual path of spirituality.
I'm intrigued by the idea Tom raised, and I know, Dan, we're not letting you get in here. We sure should. You're the host.
No, this is what I love. I love just watching. I got a few thoughts. I'll get in. I got control.
But I mean, what if BYU were like USU, but just more explicitly institutionally identified as Mormon, right? Majority Mormon, highly selective. Most kids who go there are self-selecting because they're, you know, they want what BYU offers. They want that experience. And there wasn't a sort of enforcement mechanism associated with the honor code. I mean, what would BYU stand to lose? What would it stand to gain? I think this all comes at a moment when we've witnessed in the last, was it, you know, 7-5 years, the idea of the raising of the bar for mission eligibility. But I mean, you know, as an institution, what would BYU lose if it were to move more towards that, you know, that model?
I think they would gain a lot more in the long run, for sure, is my thought. But yet the transition would be tough. And I was thinking, as Ashley was talking, and a little bit about Tom saying, here's what's going on at USU versus BYU, how we ought to really fold in, because the church is loving it right now because of the good press they're getting. And so how much of this honor code is truly to have the clean cut, you know, even when they're on TV at the basketball crowds, you know, they all look like nice kids. How much of it is, you know, the PR piece of it that is doing the damage that Ashley was just saying, which is we're not getting a chance to think for ourselves. College is when you're supposed to question the stories and question the things that you've just sort of assumed by swimming in that culture that you were raised in. This is the time to do it, and they're stunting the growth. So what, does that make any sense? Did I spur anybody's thoughts?
Well, there's a risk with that, Dan. Go ahead, Ashley.
No, go ahead, Tom. You haven't spoken in a while.
No, you first, then I'll chime in.
Well, I think it is overwhelmingly about PR, and that is why one reason I feel very cynical about the honor code, whether historically, like I mentioned, with its, you know, origins in the Wilkinson era at BYU, and origins in an extreme fear of leftist politics and what was happening to America. That's where the honor code came from at BYU. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to today, when a good chunk of the honor code is devoted to, and I know people throw this word around all the time, but to Pharisaic concepts of what you look like and how the outer vessel supposedly reflects this inner, you know, spirituality that I think is bunk and has way more to do with looking like someone who could get a job in corporate America than actually being a good Mormon. And so I think that BYU is the PR arm of the Mormon Church, and they want to produce a certain kind of student that fits in with society and is very flush with society and doesn't make waves. And I think that that is mostly what the honor code is used for. And just as one example of many, I remember being on BYU campus and we wanted to have a protest against the war in Iraq. So we're talking about dropping bombs on a foreign country, and that's an ethical issue that religious people should care about. And we wanted to do that, but we were told, no, we couldn't do that. And we had to leave the quad because protesting in that way was against the honor code because we were trespassing on space, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just this whole elaborate justification. And as we were being escorted off of the quad, the army came in and set up a giant standing wall and passing out free hot chocolate and was basically letting people go through like an army simulator and recruiting. And I said, wait a minute, why can they be here and we can't? And they said, oh, well, they're not violating the honor code because they got a permit. And I said, and you permitted them because you agree with them. And so it just creates this, from that to like, you know, my cousin into the library and having, you know, a drink and then saying he couldn't have it there because of it. You know, like it's so elastic that it basically becomes a behavioral enforcer that I think does more to reinstate every day the conservatism and kind of suburbanism of Mormon culture than it does actually make good Mormons.
Ashley, I've got a question about that, because you've kind of hit on this theme a couple times here tonight, and this comes, you know, as an outsider, I'm asking you. You know, you've hit on this idea of the aesthetic that the honor code produces and the suburban ideal that it produces. Do you feel, I'm getting the feeling you feel like this influences Mormonism broadly too, because you know, produces a certain type of Mormon as well. Is that kind of where you're getting?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that people would say, you know, like, what is it to be a Mormon? A Mormon means I wear a skirt of this length and have a hairstyle of this sort and vote and behave in these ways and have these views about authority and dissent, rather than a Mormon as somebody who has these beliefs and tries to live them in these ways in a very complicated world. I think it creates that answer.
So your argument then is the honor code has an effect far beyond those that attend BYU.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Well, and Ashley, in your podcast, or excuse me, in your Sunstone session, I think the very first thing you said is BYU is one of the main factories or one of the main places that produce Mormon leaders going forward. You know, and that's part of the investment is to crank it out. And here they're producing people. And one of the sports columnists who was actually kind of challenging BYU on their thing, he says, you know, regular Mormon standards are a lot, you know, he says the BYU Honor Code is Mormon standards on steroids. You know, so in other words, if they do internalize this, that like Ashley's talking about this mindset, and they really don't wrestle, and they aren't getting so much of the college experience, what they end up being is even uber more Mormon at this higher, but also this level of equating the outside, you know, with inside spirituality and whatnot.
I mean, those outward observances, I mean, that emphasis on outward observances is just a symptom of our increasing assimilation as a people. I mean, white ethnic Mormons are assimilating by virtue of their increasing class status. We're, you know, I mean, and it's the word of wisdom came into strong enforcement when we started assimilating, and the appearance stuff has come in the last, you know, 10 and 15 years as the assimilation has only accelerated. We have to set ourselves apart visually, right?
Yeah. And that is my analysis of the situation. Exactly, Joanna, is that it is a function and a driver of our desire to assimilate and become like every other American and become a mainstream American religion. And I think that there are some differences that we should be proud to keep. And I think that our focus should be on creating thoughtful people who can do good in the world and who are not, you know, restricted in that desire by this false concept of authority or dissent. I mean, there's a point at which, I don't know how you feel, Joanna, but at BYU, you no longer have to read the letters to the editor in the Daily Universe. You already know what they say. Somebody is going to be shocked and appalled that somebody did one thing that was one hair to the left or right of what was handed down from, you know, the administration or blah, blah, whatever it is. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, false piety and a lot of, you know, words flung around. And in the end, everybody's going to decide that what that person should have done in whatever situation was obeyed, you know, their authorities. And that becomes a more important Mormon value than any other ones. And I could pick about 100 that I think are more important. So,
I mean, my objections the heart of my objections may differ slightly from yours, just from in what I witnessed was, you know, the capacity for predatory abuse of the honor code and its enforcement, profiling certain people as being, you know, as being deserving of greater surveillance. And then, you know, the cruelty that elicits, and that cruelty, that profiling and that predatory instinct that it brings out, those do stay with our culture for a long time. They really do. They're a part of who Mormons are. And it's not the beautiful side of who we are, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Tom, the outsider, I actually went to BYU and I broke the honor code all the time. I was back in the days of Jim McMahon and those guys, and I became friends with one of the sports team members, and I wasn't being very honorable in my acts back then. So I think we represent kind of three different generations, me, Joanna, and Ashley there. And there wasn't this pressure to turn in, you know, I guess it states in the honor code to help others live the honor code, which means turn your, you know, rat your neighbor out, because it's the loving thing to do to get them right with God, you know, or it'll lead to that or something. But Tom, I guess as the outsider, do you have any thoughts about this?
He's feeling good about being an Aggie right about now.
And a Cornhusker.
I'm glad that I chose Utah State. There's probably people that BYU is the right choice for them, but I was glad I went there. But just kind of following up, Ashley mentioned, I believe it was Ashley, you mentioned that one of the purposes of BYU existing is to produce future leaders for the church. Is that right?
I think it was me, but it was. Oh. But I was quoting Ashley from her Sunstone session. Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, in And if BYU were to be more lax, as we were discussing earlier, maybe having a self-enforcing code, and maybe more tolerant of pluralism, wouldn't that objective be undermined? Because, I mean, I look at my experience at Utah State, and I can think of, you know, a dozen of my friends who showed up to college with a literal belief in the church and who left either not believing it at all or having resigned. And I think if BYU were to be relaxed, wouldn't that risk increase for the institution and undermine that objective?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, for me, I feel that the process is far more important than the product. And we're told all the time in Mormonism that the purpose is to follow a faith process wherever it goes and agree to the consequences of that. And I think if we're really genuine in that and we're really about finding the truth, we'll let people take their paths. As long, you know, we'll let people take their honest paths, and the emphasis will be on whether or not they're honest rather than whether or not they concluded the right thing. So I think what you bring up is actually exactly what I fear about the honor code, is that it makes faith seem like something that concludes the right thing instead of a process that is honest in every step for the person taking those steps. And so I think it goes from process to product. And I think anytime any institution, especially religion, goes there, it loses the spirit you lose the spirit of the religion. So yeah, they could have a lot of people who think their way out of Mormonism or who decide it's not for them. And I think that that's people's prerogative in a religion that emphasizes truth as a process.
That's a great point, I think. Another thing that I actually was really impressed with, Ashley, was a reflection you did in the Sunstone session about allegiance becomes this really, really high virtue, and it really doesn't deserve the place that it has. Allegiance to the church, allegiance to the prophet becomes enthroned in an environment like this. Do you want to reflect on that just for a second?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I don't know if I was supposed to be a Lutheran or what's going on with me, but I think that the allegiance question for me is in the end the most important concern that I have about the honor code, because I believe that anytime any country or religion or other kind of institution moves from the transformative principles that founded it, which are usually expansive and help people to think and be better people in the world, to then a model of allegiance as the highest form of righteousness or patriotism or whatever it is, that the value of the institution becomes producing that institution in the next generation at any cost, even if it's at the cost of these values that originally founded it. And for me, the values that founded Christianity and that founded Mormonism were expansive, the ability to decide for yourself, the ability to explore your own faith process, the ability to ask hard questions and live ethically in a complicated world. And when that is replaced by an ethic of allegiance, I think that everybody suffers because of that. And in my experience at BYU, the question of righteousness became the question of allegiance rather than, you know, are we living good lives? Are we helping each other? Are we being true to ourselves in our process? And I think that was damaging to people spiritually rather than being helpful.
Yeah, yeah. I've had lots of good experiences in Sunday schools and whatnot over the year of kind of making that point. You know, you can lead into it the right way in an LDS setting, but what you're saying is at BYU, there's really not even an opportunity to have that conversation to where you might be able to work that in. And a normal thing, people will realize it's transformation. It's who you are, not what you think and all those different things or how you appear. You can have that conversation, but you're saying at BYU, you can't.
Yeah, I think at BYU, basically, the kind of insidious thing built into the honor code is that questioning the honor code and questioning whether or not it's helpful and whether or not it's making us better people is itself against the honor code. So you can't.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's awesome.
But, you know, what's helpful and not helpful, and that's extremely damaging.
Can I jump in on that?
Yeah, please.
On this ethic of allegiance. Isn't this something that's not just a BYU honor code thing, but a phenomenon that's really taken root in Mormonism generally.
Oh, and
yeah. The best example that I can think of is, I don't know where all of you stood on Proposition 8, but I was vocal in my opposition to it. And whenever a member of the church would discuss this with me, they wanted to reframe the issue from, is Proposition 8 good public policy, to the, you know, what Ashley is really aptly called the ethic of allegiance. In other words, the question is Prop 8 good for California or good for America? The question is, well, don't you believe in prophets and apostles?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I think,
wow.
I mean, I think just wrapping it up from my point of view, I think what this discussion has highlighted, and Ashley's been so eloquent, you know, is this question of what is BYU? What role does it play in the future of the church? And what assumptions do we have about, you know, how we are to prepare for our 21st century future as Mormon people and to live out our values? And, you know, the vision that everything is being staked on right now by at least the institutional church is that there's a brand that's a highly disciplined brand. And that comes down to the way we appear, that allegiance is crucial. We're very law and order. And a lot of times that maps right onto conservatism. And I could tell you story after story. I was a very, very devout kid when I went to BYU. And I also happened to be a kid who at 19 years old figured out she was a liberal. And just story after story of astonishing just cruelty from dorm mothers, ward mates. I mean, really ridiculous stuff. And that's the downside of the vision we're staking the future of our church on, is that it makes us mean. I mean, we were mean. There are some mean people in the immigration debate, you know, who are LDS and who are citing law and order values. Some of the LGBT politics we've been participating in, we've been mean. Our church loses unorthodox members all the time because we are not a welcoming space. Is that really, you know, is that cost worth the, you know, worth the vision we're staking on for the future of the church? Is that really going to pay off for us?
Wow. Powerful. Thank you for framing it there here at the end. And I hope people will take the initiative and really complete that thought. Tom, do you have a kind of a wrap up thing? It's about time for us to close out.
Well,
thinking about basketball.
Go Aggies. That's my wrap up. I know you're going to post this, Dan, and there's going to be some discussion. And in addition to some of the issues that Joanna raised, I'm just interested in people kind of sharing what their Mormon college experience was like and what they think an ideal Mormon college experience should be like. Because I think that there are a variety of experiences that people have at BYU and maybe some of the Utah schools and certainly, you know, out around the country where Mormons are, a less dense population. I'm just interested in what people have to say about that.
That's another great one. Let's please everybody jump in and do that. I think that, I don't know if it's safe. Maybe Ashley would say no, but I think somewhere, Tom, you were arguing a little bit. We probably don't want to go straight USU route. And I think a lot of us would say, yeah, BYU can and should be a special place somehow.
Oh yeah.
But you know, how you negotiate that territory. Now maybe Ash, I'll let you kind of have a final shot here. Should BYU, I mean, other than academic, I mean, should there be, you know, something in a document that I guess you sign, or at least you affirm that something about sexual morality, something about, I mean, what are the other things in there? I mean, should there be some dress code, things like that? So Ash, why don't you kind of lead with your characteristic thunder, which we've really appreciated on this tonight, are you comfortable with a middle position, or should it just be academic honor only?
Well, I don't ever want to see the word honor by the word code again.
Ah, fantastic.
And I think it's just, you know, oxymoronic and moronic. But I think what I appreciated about my experience at BYU was exactly what I think BYU has to offer, which is there in the cracks of the honor code were all these kids who were having the most fascinating, rigorous, engaged discussions about how their religious beliefs applied in the world that I have ever seen before.
I love it. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because they were taught principles of caring about something so much that they were willing to consider everything in the light of it, and they thought that ideas were important and dangerous, so they took them seriously. and they wanted to live well, and so they wanted to know how to live. And we had the most, like, rip-roaring, no-holds-barred discussions on every topic I can think of at BYU, precisely because of that culture. You can't create that in a code. You can espouse those principles and let the discussion start. And I think if you give people that autonomy, they'll take it from there. And so I don't believe it can be something captured in a code. I believe that we could do a lot of things to encourage those discussions, though. And that was what was special to me about BYU, is the people who took ideas seriously and who tried to apply them. And I feel like that transformed me as a spiritual person and as just an ethical person in the world. That's what I would like to see.
Me too.
Yay. Hard to argue against that. So we'll leave whether or not your hair should touch your collar and all those other things the blog discussion. But
and I feel bad we've had this whole discussion on Brandon's account. But let's just remember one of the costs of the honor code enforcement is that, you know, a young man's going to have a harder time finishing his education. And, you know, that's not to be underestimated.
Yeah, I agree, and that's where I wanted to bring this back. This is a tragedy, no matter how you look at it, that spawned what I think was a fascinating discussion, and I'm so thankful to you guys. But yeah, there's any universal or larger principle thing always has particulars. Then you can never forget that there's real people, real beating hearts. It's hard enough to have a successful relationship, if Brandon does have a girlfriend who's pregnant, and if they decide to continue on and stuff, relationships are hard enough without this extra burden of being in the public spotlight for, you know, a long time. We'll be there. I know that's probably the case with Harvey Unga and others as well. So all power to Brandon that he and his family and his girlfriend, and if there's a baby involved, that everything will go well. Any other final thoughts, you guys?
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I hope you guys will come on again.
Thanks to everyone for listening.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for that. And please do what John's little teaser that'll come out at the end of this thing. And feel free to subscribe to Mormon Matters with a financial contribution. It'll be very appreciated and will certainly help things keep going, as well as just build the community that is being outlined here, for supportive environment for people to wrestle with all issues in Mormonism. That's what the Open Stories Foundation is all about, and any contribution to the Mormon Matters podcast will be put to good use. So thank you. You guys have all been terrific. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for your intelligence, the goodwill, and good hearts. And I encourage all of you, I'll certainly let you know when we post this, to kind of keep an eye on the comments. And hopefully we all can kind of commit to really having a good discussion for a few more days.
Cool.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Good night. Good night, everyone, on the listeners.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.